Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the study session meeting for Tuesday, May 22nd, 2018. The time right now is 7:09 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Cutaback, Hanford, Davis, and Scarborough.
Thank you. And we have the Sky Valley Indian Education Native Youth Council here this evening to receive a proclamation for the 14th Annual Traditional Powwow. Councilmember Hanford has agreed to allow them to come in and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance tonight. So I would ask the students to come on forward to lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Please note for the record that council members Gamble, Camp, and Rasmussen had identified that they would not be here this evening. We received word from council member Camp this evening. So unless there's objection, I would like to ask the council to consider them as excused absences. Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move forward then to announcements and presentations. The first announcement, the first item under announcements and presentations that I have this evening is a proclamation for this, for the 14th Annual Traditional Powwow. I'll go ahead and read that into the record. Whereas the Monroe, Snohomish, and Sultan Public School District's Skycomish Valley Indian Education Program is a federally funded program that focuses on academic support and cultural activities. And whereas the program serves Native American, Alaska Native students preschool through high school age in Monroe, Snohomish, and Sultan Public School Districts. And whereas it is valuable that residents of the city of Monroe be aware of the importance of Native American, Alaska Native education programs. And whereas the Monroe, Snohomish, and Sultan Public School District's Skycomish Indian Education Program and supporting nonprofit parent organization are sponsoring a unique ceremony on Saturday, May 26, 2018, entitled the 14th Annual Traditional Powwow. And whereas partnership, awareness, and cooperation are important themes of the traditional powwow. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, do hereby thank the Skycomish Valley Indian Education Program and encourage the residents and businesses in Monroe to participate in the 14th Annual Traditional Powwow on Saturday, May 26, 2018. And I would like to go ahead and invite a couple of the folks from that organization forward to say a few words about the event this weekend.
Okay. So basically,
please come on up to the podium and announce your name for the record.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
My name is Mars Miller. I'm the family liaison coordinator for the program, and we serve Native students in Snohomish, Sultan, and Monroe schools. It's a program that started in Monroe in 1980, and over the years we've grown to be a consortium of three school districts. And our students in any given year are from as many as 50 or 60 different bands, tribes, and nations all over the country. Every year we have someone new in the program. It really is quite amazing. A lot of us are maybe not from the state, and so if we didn't have this organization, we're off reservation and we don't get to go home all the time, so this is our home away from home here to have this program. And not only for cultural things, but also for academic things. A lot of these students that are here tonight participate in our math support program and reading program. And this will be the 14th year that we have our traditional powwow. Traditional powwow is one that it means that we invite everyone to dance. It's not a contest powwow. There's a lot of really good dancers, but we don't have prize money, and so everyone gets to come out on the floor and dance more so than at a contest powwow. And we invite the whole community to come. And so we really appreciate all these years that you have supported us and declared a proclamation in support of it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mars.
And I'd like just a couple more people here, and then the kids could introduce themselves quickly.
That would be great.
Can you guys add Craig?
Sure.
Kenita is the president of our parent organization.
Hello, thank you for having us here. My name is Kenita Sherman. I went to school here in Monroe back in the 80s when this all started. And my children, Brandy and David Sherman, went through the program, and now my grandson is in the program. I am now president of this organization and of the Suquamish tribe. And thank you all for having us.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm Craig Young, Lakota. My kids went through this program, went to school. My son went to Monroe High School. My daughter went to Sultan High School. And a few words about the powwow. It's like anybody who has not gone, you really need to come, because there's free food, free buffalo stew, free fly bread, fantastic music. Anybody that you know that's a veteran will be honored. We always honor the veterans. You get to go out and dance, round dances in the arena, and you get to talk to people. There will also be crafts and booths where people will be selling traditional items. So it's really a lot of fun. And remember, even if you don't go, every time you walk the streets of Monroe, you're walking the homeland of the Tulalip peoples that used to live here. And I always tell the flagpole that's on Main Street, just before you get into downtown, there used to be a longhouse there, a large longhouse. And Stan Jones, the former leader of the Tulalip Nation, council leader, his family grew up there. And his grandmother is buried in Sultan. And our very first powwow, we had the Tulalip people come, the Salmon Celebration singers, and Stan Jones to come and welcome us, because this is their traditional homeland. So the powwow was started in the traditional, honorable way. And we really appreciate it if everybody comes and has a good time.
Thank you.
And then last, there's a couple students that would like to introduce themselves. All of you can just come up here. Okay, you first.
My name is Asia. I go to Frank Wagner Elementary, and I'm from the Karuk tribe.
What tribe?
Karuk. I am Jackson Sherman Dunn. I am from the Suquamish tribe, and I go to Chambers Elementary.
My name is Kenneth Nollick. I go to Tulalip Tribe, and I'm from Sultan Middle School.
My name's Kobe, and I go to Frank Wagner Elementary, and I'm from the Suquamish Tribe.
I'm Maya Dunn. I'm in ninth grade, and I go to Sultan High School, and my family is Suquamish, and this is little Septana, and she's from Tulalip. She's 8.5 months old, and they also call her Butchup, because that's it's Lashusi for talker, or talking.
I'm in the Tulalip tribe, and I go to Sultan Elementary School.
Thank you.
And then one of the things that we like to teach our kids is to practice introducing themselves. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I have a proclamation.
Appreciate the city supporting us with the proclamation. We invite you. We'll be honored if you come to the powwow.
Yes, it is. It's a Saturday. And if you come, at the grand entries at 1 and at 6, we always ask for mayors, council members, anyone from the community to be a part of the opening and welcome everyone. So if you show up at that time, we would love to welcome you up to the speaker stand to say a few words here.
Thank you. So we have a proclamation to present to you.
Yeah.
Is there somebody who would you like a picture of the group? I see an iPhone out.
Yeah.
Okay. Would there be somebody that would be willing to volunteer to take a picture so that they can be in the picture? Thank you, Ms. Hendrickson.
Mars.
I would imagine.
Room over here. Come on over here.
Room over there.
Where do you want me?
Come on in.
Turn around.
Here.
Right.
Right.
The next item we have on our agenda is another proclamation. This is from Memorial Day. The copy that I'm reading is different than is in your packets. So proclamation, Memorial Day, May 28, 2018. Whereas we must never take for granted that as we go about our daily business in our community and while we sleep at night in the safety of our homes, we do so while members of our armed forces are at work in dangerous and challenging conditions to protect us, our liberties, and our interests at home and abroad. And whereas on Memorial Day each year, we remember and honor members of our armed forces who have served, who have fallen in service to our country. And whereas those who have fallen have left us more than a memory, they have left us with an enduring legacy that we live today and that we should honor in our daily walk and interactions with one another. And whereas, in remembrance of those who have fallen, the Monroe Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 7511 will host its annual Flags of Our Fallen 5K and Run on Lake Tai, at Lake Tai, on Saturday, May 26, 2018, at 9:30 a.m., and will hold a ceremony on Monday, May 28, 2018, at 11 a.m. at the Monroe IOOF Cemetery. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, do hereby encourage residents in Monroe to remember those members of our armed forces who have fallen in service to our country, to honor the legacy they left to us in our daily walk, and to join me in honoring their service and memory this Memorial Day weekend. We have a couple people here to receive the proclamation. And I'm sorry, Drew James and Pat Geary, please come on forward. Council members, will you please join me? Thank you very much for honoring those who are fallen.
Thank you very much.
One more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Out there.
Thank you. Yes, I will be out there.
Appreciate it.
Okay, the next item we have on our agenda this evening is a presentation. Item number three. This is AB 18-129, presentation 2018 legislative session update. Mr. Wall.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Brian Wall with Green Lake Strategies. It has been my honor to represent you in Olympia. Okay, I'll be brief and breeze through this as quickly as I can so if we can get you out of here and enjoying this beautiful summer evening, almost summer. Just a quick reminder, stepping back, during last November, The Democrats picked up a Senate seat in the 45th legislative district to give them the majority in the Senate. So the Democrats had the majority, a slim majority of 25-24 in the Senate, and in the House they had the majority of 50-48. So very slim margins, as a reminder, and which makes it, because of slim margins, it ensures that things are evenly split, and both sides get to work together to be able to find legislation and agreement as we move forward. It was a short session, so remember that it's a biennial session. We have a biennial setup, so the even years are short sessions of only 60 days. And it was thankfully, truly a short session. We actually got out on time as opposed to last year, where we went 105 days regular session plus three special sessions, which was felt like it went on forever. So it was a relief to be able to put this one behind us. Generally, during those short sessions, what they do is their primary task is to make adjustments because they have a biennial budget, a two-year budget, and halfway through that budget cycle, they figure out what changes need to be made. So they kind of look through the budget book, figure out how the revenue is coming in, if additional revenue is available to be able to spend. And so that was the primary objective. But 60 days, it makes very short time frames and turnaround for the policy and fiscal committees and the hearings, and then be able to send legislation over to the other side, the other chamber, the opposite chamber, to be able to then review in an even shorter period of time a very long list of bills. So it makes it a challenge to be able to move through, and I'll talk about that briefly in a few minutes on one of our priority bills and how that affected us. But generally, another interesting change we don't usually see at this point in the session is we've had a lot of familiar faces in representing us in Olympia for a long time. And we saw some changes this last time around, where we have a new senator, Keith Wagoner, and a new representative, Carolyn Eslick, who were appointed just before session started. Actually, as session started for the senator. So he had a very quick turnaround in getting his feet on the ground and getting ramped up for a quick session. So it was interesting for him. But we were very fortunate to have those two because of their local government experience. Because of Senator Wagner was previously the mayor of Sultan, Cedar Lily, and Representative Eslick was the mayor of Sultan. And with that background, that helped us be able to, they went into the session knowing local government issues, and so that was helped us work with them through the session. Also, Representative Christensen, who's been a longtime friend of the city, it announced his retirement. So now we're going to have three new faces going into next session and in 2019. So that'll make for some new entertaining an opportunity for us to work together with some new folks and educate them about our issues in Monroe. And but like I say, as of now, two of them have local government experience. Of course, the elections will take place in November, and all 98 representatives and half of the senators are up, and it will be interesting to see what the outcome is going into the next session and where things lie. So, we'll get to 2019 as the months come, but looking back real quickly, some of the key things that that the legislature did was the operating budget, the supplemental operating budget. It added $600 million to the budget that they passed last year. And in doing so, they are also able to provide a state property tax cut and then be able to fund that with the additional revenues and the rainy day fund. So the property tax cut is a 0.3 cents per thousand of assessed value. The primary things that the supplemental budget was funding was education, state employees, mental health, family services, and thankfully the state share revenues and municipal research center, the basic law, and law enforcement academy and criminal justice and public defense were all funded and continue to provide us with the shared revenues that the legislature is committed to. On the transportation budget, they added $300 million, primarily for highway and bridge maintenance, state patrol and ferries. And as we've all heard, 405 and 522 is 405 is a mess, and they're working to fix it. So they're putting a lot of additional money. Most of the additional money that they were able to put into the 522 and 405 is primarily from tolling revenue. They are seeing a lot more tolling revenue than they expected, and because of that, that's allowed them to make some additional investments into that interchange in 522 and 405. So that will help us and our citizens as they make their commute on to 405, but as we know, we also still have 522 widening that needs to be addressed. We were kind of in a holding pattern, just a reminder, we are in a holding pattern this session, because last session we got the $750,000 for the consultant, who is in the process of doing their work and expected to come back with additional information by 2019 legislative session to help inform our next efforts and what we want to be doing, what we're going to be asking the legislature to do during the next budget cycle. Also, they funded a city transportation study, so they were able to put aside us $200,000 to really investigate what the needs are of the cities for transportation. So that'll be interesting to see what those results provide and informing for the legislature to be hopefully have a lot more information to be able to work with and help us be able, all of our cities, be able to make the case for why we need additional help. And sharing those revenues that are coming in to help our local roads. Okay, moving on, as you recall, last session, while it went on for a long time, they did not pass the capital budget during the 2017 session or the three special sessions, primarily because of the Hearst decision, and they were able to resolve that, thankfully, in the first couple of weeks of our session, and because they were able to resolve the Hearst decision, came to conclusion there, we were able to pass the capital budget, providing $4 billion in funding for classrooms, mental health facilities, supportive housing, parks, and recreation facilities. Included in that, before I get to what was included in that, let me just touch on the supplemental budget. They also passed a supplemental budget providing an additional $200 million. But in the capital budget that finally passed, thankfully, they were able to address, we were able to get our $800,000 for our all-weather multi-purpose fields for Lake Tide Park. So that was a huge victory for us, and thankful that we were able to get that. Of course, most of the heavy lifting, for those of you that still see former Senator Pearson and former Representative John Koster and then Representative Christensen, they were the ones that really did the heavy lifting previously in the last session to be able to get that in. As you recall, that was in the agreed upon capital budget going through, coming out of the last, 2017. So we have that in place, and so be sure to thank them and let them know how much we appreciate the work that they did, have a chance to run into them. Our new legislators also were very instrumental in helping to make sure that it stayed in there. So that was the key. So be sure to thank again Senator Wagner, Representative Veselick, and Representative Christensen for their efforts to, as you know, just in case anything went sideways, as in final negotiations, everybody held firm and said, no, we're gonna keep those the agreed upon capital budget and pass that, so we were able to get the funding. As we are all facing the challenges throughout our communities, not only in Monroe, but throughout Puget Sound, and even throughout the entire state, homelessness and mental health and human services is a growing challenge that we need to address and have needed to address, and the legislature started stepping up. Last year, you may recall, the document recording fee was about to expire. The sunset provision was going to take it away. So last year, they agreed to reinstate that until 2023 for the $40. This year, Well, what we were able to do was get an additional or an increase in the document recording fee of additional $22 and make it permanent. So we've now got $62 going to each account for document recording fees. Each county gets those. Of course, those, the county is responsible for working together with the jurisdictions to help address the homelessness issue. There are a lot of other issues relating to affordable housing, none of which ended up really passing that were significant. Some of the, there were a couple of things that we were hoping, working for, that and hoping to see pass through the legislature, provide some additional tools for cities to be able to put into affordable housing measures. Those did not make it through. There are other, and as we know, affordable housing and homelessness is going to continue to be a challenge for all of our communities, so we'll continue to be working towards that, finding additional solutions to help our communities. A very related issue is our mental health and human services. And there are a number, and thankfully, everybody's starting to talk about it. Everybody recognizes the challenge, and everybody recognizes that we need to do something. There's a lot of legislation, again, that that was working its way through the system, and they made some good steps, but by no means does it solve the problem. So we're still going to continue to need to work on solving these challenges. But we did, we were able to create a mental health field responder pilot program. I believe it was the idea originated here in Skokomish County. And so that is a pilot program that we're going to be able to start to see some efforts and some funding go into to help us see if we can make a little bit of progress through that. And that's kind of helping to integrate the our police and human services to and mental health issues to be able to work together. So I think it's a good step. Because as a pilot program, we'll be able to see what the, some of the initial results are and then hopefully be able to expand on those efforts. We were also able to create a system for safe and secure collection and disposal of unwanted medications. And as we know, opioids is a growing crisis, continues to be a crisis that we are needing to address in our communities. So part of it, part of the solution is just making sure that we're able to dispose of unwanted and unused medications. We were also... So those were actual bills that passed. We were also able to get some funding in the budget that allocated funding to create a criminal justice diversion program, assistance to county behavioral health organizations, and opioid treatment and overdose prevention programs. So that was, again, some good steps that were helpful, but a lot more work needs to go into it. Getting back to the budget real quickly, probably the biggest success there, as we recall, we continue to see that our shared revenue streams are going to pay for essential city services. But there was one challenge that we were going into this session. That was that there were still two of the basic law enforcement academy classes that were not funding. We were able to get funding in the budget, in the supplemental budget, to be able to help us pay for those classes and ensure that we have space to send our future cops to, I guess, right? Okay, the one that got away is, and this is a casualty really of the short session and the quick turnaround, but we did find a lot of success nonetheless on maintaining our parks through a bill that we introduced called the House, it was House Bill 2829, to allow us to de-annex park districts. So, assuming that everybody is familiar with the issue, I won't go into a whole lot of detail, but the challenge is that, of course, there you have a parks district that is Monroe and beyond, and they're responsible for, potentially, for funding our parks, but have not done so for a number of years. So the success that we found in introducing this issue is twofold, I think. One is it really opened up discussions with the Parks District and the county to start to look at ways we might be able to help fund our parks through the Parks District. So that is good news that we are in a place now that we can hope to find some additional funding potentially through that avenue. But it also, because we introduced the subject, most new legislation takes a little while to move through the process, several years, as a matter of fact. We were able to get the bill introduced, heard, and with no opposition, we were able to reach out and work together with the State Parks and Recreation District Association, and now it's on their radar screen, and we're now working with that association, and there are others that are starting to recognize, I'm hearing from other cities, that are also interested in this issue. So we're starting to see more and more folks that are interested in and concerned about this issue and figuring out how can we potentially change boundaries of park districts. It is just whether or not the city of Monroe needs this tool. It is interesting that there a parks district just has no ability to change its boundaries once it's established. So it just makes sense that, and it's really a housekeeping measure, that it would allow a parks district to be able to, you know, as times change and needs change and communities change, allow a parks district to change its boundaries. We were able to get the, like I say, we had the hearing, it actually passed out of committee unanimously. Then we went to the Rules Committee. We got it out of the Rules Committee, went to the House floor, we got it on the second reading calendar, and we were on the short list, and then time ran out. So we were able to get attention, but we couldn't quite get it past the finish line through the House. But because it's now just, you know, on the radar screen, so we're able to hopefully be able to move that issue through with a lot more time during the next session. Okay, just very quickly, there are a couple of other key issues that impacted cities. One was that passed was the Voting Rights Act. That was modeled after the federal legislation, Voting Rights Act. It allows it protects equal opportunity for minority groups to participate in local elections, and it prohibits actions that infringe upon the ability of minority groups to participate in the election process. It creates a cause of action, authorizes courts to order appropriate remedies, including council districts, potentially, for a violation of the act, and authorizes local governments to change their election system to remedy the violation. And if, through the notification process, it allows the city an opportunity to make changes. If those changes are not sufficient, then the individual can file a lawsuit. Hopefully, it is not going to be an issue, but it is, all political subdivisions are under this the Voting Rights Act, and if there is a group that feels that they do not have equal access to the and representation through their local government, they are able to at least raise the issue and try and find some remedies. So that would pass. The other issue that you may recall from last session that I carried over to this session was telecommunications and the new 4G networks. And if you haven't looked at updating your local ordinances, we want to probably be taking a look at that. I'm sure that the telecommunication companies are going to be working with you and wanting to try and find some solutions. But that would be the preferred option if we address those and we have the ability to make, you know, model it in a way that works for our community. They, however, are also continuing to try and pass a state preemption through the state legislature that would dictate to cities how we will allow this new technology. So it would be a good one for us to get ahead of. It did not pass. There were several versions. It went through a lot of... It is a somewhat controversial issue, and because of this first session, it ended up not... They didn't have time to work through all of the issues. It's much broader than just telecommunications for the 4G and the new technology. It also included, a lot of legislation was also including the rural broadband and trying to help rural communities have access to the internet. And so that is a high priority for rural communities and statewide. But the legislation also is addressing, you know, a number of different areas, a number of different issues, and so because of that, they weren't able to pass it this year, but we do expect it to come back again next year. So just be aware of that, and we can talk more about, if you haven't, again, if you haven't started to address through local ordinances, what kind of potential solutions you might want to think about here in Monroe. The other issue that we were there and testified on was annexations. Actually, it was there. We were there because of the House Bill 2829, the parks issue, was being heard at the same time that they had a hearing on a couple of annexation issues. And as we know, annexation is a challenge for our communities because cities are responsible for providing urban services to our urban growth areas. And at the same time, those folks don't have the ability to have a say in what kind of services they're being provided because they can't elect their city council. They're not part of the city. But it is still, there are a lot of hoops that folks have to jump through to be able to annex areas, and you've faced some of these challenges in the past. Is an issue that is vexing, to say the least, and the cities have been working on through the legislature for, well, since the Growth Management Act, so for probably 20 years now, 20 plus years. But it is something that still needs to be addressed, and we'll want to find some solutions. But on the flip side of that, there are folks that are concerned about being annexed. And so that's what some of this legislation was trying to do, was to make it harder to annex certain areas. And thankfully, we were there, we were able to say a few words. The mayor did a fantastic job of stepping up and sharing some insights from the city perspective of why it was a bad legislation, and it did not come out of committee. So, kudos, great job. So those were some of the key issues citywide that we're facing. Next steps, of course, we are now in the process of developing our 2019 legislative priorities, working with the mayor and the legislative committee. We've already had a chance to kind of review some of the draft ideas and some of the issues. As I say, mental health, homelessness continue to be, the opioid crisis continues to be a key issue that we need to address and are going to continue looking for solutions on. We were successful with getting the funding for Lake Tye Athletic Fields at $800,000. That issue, we're able to now move on to the next several of issues, capital budget issues. And so a couple of things that we've been looking at are the RCO grants and getting some additional funding for Lake Tye through RCO grants and to be able to close the gap, because it's a total budget of $2 million for what we want to do with the athletic field. So this $800,000 was a great step, but it doesn't finish the job. So we're looking for additional funding for Lake Tye through the RCO grants. Also, the Boys and Girls Club has some needs that we'd like to partner with them potentially with. And of course, the Connecting Monroe, the 191st Street extension. And so that'll be a key capital budget. 522 will be coming back. We'll have an opportunity to try and advance that $10 million set aside for 2025. We'll be wanting to make that a key issue to see if we can move those dollars forward and find any additional dollars. But that'll be something that not, you know, as you recall, this is something that it's going to be a few years before the legislature has a new investment package to be able to pay for the completion, the construction of 522 widening. So we want to be looking and working with a lot of other stakeholders and working with the county to see what other funding sources might be available, whether it's federal, state, regional, other ideas, things we want to explore. So we'll keep that on the radar screen. We want to be working with you on some ideas that we might want to pursue to help try and get some additional dollars put into 522 sooner than later. Also, of course, just working and reaching out and working together with the county on a number of different issues, whether it's local budget issues, trying to get additional dollars through the county dedicated to the city, as well as reaching out and working together with the federal delegation and seeing what kind of funds we can pull from the feds. So continue to work with our coalition that we created for 522, as well as WashDOT, the Department of Transportation, and other stakeholders that might be interested in working together and helping solve our problem. So, breeze through it very quickly. I hope that gives you a basic idea of how things went. I could have gone on much longer than you probably would prefer, but happy to open up to any questions if you want to exploring topic further.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
The telecommunications one, is that just the state's response to the net neutrality rule at the federal level that they're kind of
no.
It's under
in the courts now, I think, or it's going back to the Senate or the House. I can't remember which one overturned it.
It's federal.
But you're talking about expanding broadband to rural and making sure people have access out there, so that sounds...
Yeah, it's not really the state's solution to it so much as the state just trying to help provide, expand internet access throughout the state to rural areas. So that's one part of, one piece of the legislation. The piece that we've been most concerned about are the, you know, the 4G. Now, obviously, you know, the more rural communities that don't have internet are going to be more concerned about the rural broadband.
Right.
But it's the state mandating and telling cities what and how we're going to provide 4G access.
Okay.
And, you know, and what kind of facilities they're able to use and put in place, and the legislation. So there are a couple of different versions. The Senate actually had a version that was going to mandate how and when and where those facilities could be done. And that was run basically by the industry itself.
Okay.
And so there were some concerns about what kind of impact it would have visually and on our communities and kind of the ability we have to, you know, change or provide how it's being done. And then there, the House actually had a version that was creating a more incentive program that would designate communities that were investment ready,
right,
through DOC, Department of Commerce. And so when the legislation got out of the Senate and went over to the House, they stripped all of the 4G stuff out of it, and it just went, and it just became a rural broadband issue. So there's clearly, you know, a lot of things are still need to work through at this point.
Okay.
But we do expect the legislation to come back again, and a heavy push. There is a very heavy lobbying push from the industry to try and get the state mandate.
Well, and it would seem like there's a lot of federal protection for telecommunications. So
yeah, that's very true. And as you look at local ordinances, you'll see that you're... don't have a whole lot of flexibility.
Exactly.
They already have the ability to put in, you know, the facilities. However, we do have some ability to have some influence the, you know, the visual impact that it has.
Okay. I think that would be important to kind of pay attention to. I remember, I think when I was first on council, we had a situation with the cell tower going in kind of the fry line. So, and there was community kind of angst about it and wanting to know what. So I think that's something to pay attention to.
Yeah, and so just real quickly, the you know, the cell towers is kind of for the 3G model, so now the new 4G. What they're doing with and the interesting position that we're in as elected representatives of our community is we all want to expand technology and ability and access, and so we want to see the 4G work, and we, at the same time we want to protect our neighborhoods, right? And but these new 4G facilities are and forget the term, I just actually dealt with this in my city, they're looking at you. So the 3G is these big facilities, and the 4G is almost every other telephone pole. So it's localizing it. So so every corner of your neighborhood is connecting to this facility, and it has the potential of having a very negative impact. The challenge is, of course, every telecommunications company has their own installation, right? Their own box. And so you potentially could, although evidently they're saying, the industry is saying that they can't have, you know, multiple boxes on one pole because they can't compete with each other. But you're still looking at this large, you know, couple foot sized box on every single telephone pole, potentially, or utility pole throughout the city.
What about utilities? I mean, because you're doing underground utilities, how does it work there?
Yeah, so then they have to find it in different locations. So they could end up putting it on, you know, other
something
top
else.
Buildings or somewhere else. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. And so there's so it is, like you say, it is something we need to watch. And the way to potentially get out in front of that is to be working with the industry to adopt our own local ordinance.
Right. Okay. And then I had a question on the city transportation study that you brought up, and that there was funding that was going to be provided for a transportation study that might benefit cities. How would that help Monroe?
Well, it's to study all cities and what kind of challenges we have in providing local roads.
Okay.
So, for instance, it wouldn't be related to highways or 522.
Okay.
It's going to be related to the lack of, honestly, the lack of revenue that we have to be able to maintain and create new roads. It's really going to be informative. Mostly that's how it's going to benefit Monroe, is informing. It'll give us a tool to be able to work with our legislators to let them know these are the challenges that we face throughout the state, and you know, this is the funding need for that we're seeing, and this is where the funds that are available are to be able to meet that need. And so in our capital budgets, we just don't have enough money to be able to meet everything we're trying to do for our community.
Is the study going to come up with solutions, or just kind of highlight what the issues are?
It will look at options.
Okay.
It's not going to come up with solutions and say this is what you need to do, but it will provide some insight into some potential options. Look at what other states are doing and offering, and so give us a tool to be able to work with our legislators and inform them. And so, for instance, when the gas tax is potentially increased, you may recall the nickel package after that, a certain portion of that was set aside, that gas tax was set aside just for cities. There's also additional funding that goes to the Transportation Improvement Board that helps fund city local projects. So just being, that will help us advocate as cities as a whole and AWC to advocate for additional funding, or when new funding investment packages come available, or just even through the transportation budget every couple of years, to be able to say, we ought to set aside a few more dollars for TIB, Transportation Improvement Board, as an example.
And then the last one was the $62
document recording.
22? Was it 62 or 22?
Well, they increased it by 22 to 62 in the next 2 minutes.
I'm correcting.
Yes.
So what does that mean for us?
So that is maintained by the county and operated by the county. So what it means for us in Monroe is that we need to be working with the county and letting them know what our needs are and trying to get funding for various housing projects, homeless projects here in the city.
Okay, so it's not a sure thing like we get We have to advocate to the county on this is what our needs are, so help us fund it. So I think that's something to pay attention to too. I don't know if we're currently kind of doing that, looking at that, and going to the county and asking for help with that.
Yeah, if you're aware of projects or have some ideas on projects, or are aware of organizations that are interested in doing projects, it's working with the county and seeing if we can draw some dollars back here at home.
Well, thank you. Those were the things that kind of stuck out to me.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from council? All right. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. The next item that we have on our agenda this evening is public comments. This is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the city council on any issue related to the city of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. If you have not signed in and you would like to speak, you will be afforded that opportunity after those who have signed in have spoken. Again, public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. The first person that we have who has signed up to speak this evening is Ms. Chris Hendrickson.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. Chris Hendrickson, 3910 243rd Place, Southeast, A301 in Bonneville. And I have two things. First, I just wanted to say thank you to the council for supporting the Choose Monroe magazine project. And I wanted to say thank you to the city for allowing me to work on that project. It has meant a great deal to me. I am madly in love with that magazine, and I'm super excited to do another issue. And so thank you very much. Okay. And then also I wanted to invite everyone to come to Lake High on Saturday, this Saturday, 26th, for our second annual Flags for Fallen Memorial Day themed 5K race. So two spins around Lake High. Honorable Mayor will be speaking, and we have Sergeant Brian Johnston playing the bagpipes this year, and we will also have a young lady singing the national anthem. And even if you don't want to run, just stop by. We're going to have some raffle items that are really super cool. So everybody's welcome. We hope to see you all there. Thank you.
The next person we have signed up to speak this evening is Miss Linda Carlston. Miss Carlston, please come forward and state your name and address for the record. And thank you for coming.
Good evening. I'm Linda Carlston. Live at 13461 Summit Avenue, Southeast in Monroe. I'm the Trombley Hills HOA president, and I'm here to address some concerns we have regarding development near our neighborhood, adjoining our neighborhood. I emailed the planning committee on May the 21st addressing a mound of dirt that is approximately two stories wide. I believe it is the dirt that they dug out for their retention pond. There's no retaining wall to keep it from sliding into our park. It abuts our lot 64 and 65 in Trombley Hill. They have already they've addressed this, but they did knock down two neighbors' fences. They knocked down a fence that was part of our park. They knocked down trees. So they still have the dirt there, and I don't feel that they're addressing it. They want to put grass seed on it, but there's no sprinkler system to make the grass grow. And that's not going to, when the rains come, it's not going to retain the mound there. I wonder what concessions the city made, because they're changing it from, they're increasing it 25% in size, so instead of 75 houses, they're going to be 100 houses. So how is that going to affect the water runoff? What concessions did the city get by giving them this permission to add, you know, are they helping provide more schooling, transportation, the roads, the traffic on Chain Lake Road, because there's the construction there is astronomical. We're going to need traffic lights. The Chain Lake Road will need to be widened. So I don't know what concessions the city of Monroe has received for allowing them to increase this. Another concern we have is we have the park there that is downhill from this mound of dirt. So if we have children playing, is that going to, you know, are we going to have that falling on kids? But that area, we currently have vandalism. We have teenagers going there, drinking, whatever they want to do, and, you know, when the lights go out. The police are aware of it. They do what they can, but it's in a secluded area. Their park is going to basically back up against ours. So just brainstorming, can they do additional lighting or have surveillance cameras or what they can do to prevent more vandalism?
Ms. Carlson, I'm sorry, I have to ask you to wrap up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you can look into that for me.
Thank you. So
thank
this
you.
Is what, thank you. Yeah, and this is what I'm going to do is I'm going to have staff follow up with you. So if you could leave your name and phone number, I think I have it right here. Mm-hmm. I'll have staff give you a phone call and follow up. Did this come from an HOA meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what we may be able to do is get some more information from you. Certainly look into the dirt pile as soon as possible.
I've spoken with people, Scott, I think, and a few other people, and they said, yeah, we're going to throw grass seed on it, and it's going to be just fine.
Okay. So what we'll do is I'll follow up with our staff on it. And
okay.
To let you know, we are working on changing our zoning code. So over the next couple months, it's a really good time for you and your neighbors to provide input on the type of housing that you'd like to see developed. Mm-hmm. I know it may not help with what's being developed today, but that's something to be aware of, and I hope that folks are being plugged into the Planning Commission. But I will have Ms. Knight to my left here. We'll have somebody follow up with you.
Okay.
And then also follow up with me, and Council will go ahead and follow up with you on this as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Coming.
The next person who I have who signed up to speak this evening is Ms. Linda Driscoll. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Linda Driscoll. My husband Randy and I own Premier Polaris. We're a retail power sports dealership located at 122 Charles Street, and that's behind Dick's Tire House in the East Downtown area. I'm going to apologize in advance if my facts are a little incorrect. I'm going to explain it the way it was explained to me. But it appears I have a zoning problem and I need your help. A bit of background about our business. We relocated our dealership from Issaquah to Monroe in July of 2009, right in the middle of the economic downturn. It was a difficult time to move. We had to reestablish ourselves in this area. But we're a destination business in that we draw our customers from all over the state, as far away as Spokane or Portland, but primarily in the Seattle, whatever area, as well as Alaska. We are the largest stocking Polaris dealer in Washington State. Our vehicles start at about $4,000, but they roll out the door on average between $15,000 and $25,000. I promote Monroe in all of my advertising efforts. So I have altered my logo in all of my print, digital display, and radio advertisements. And this is how it looks in the Choose Monroe magazine. Through hard work, kindly landlords, and the upturn in the economy, our business is growing and we need more space. So about 3 weeks ago, I approached the city for a permit to construct a carport over a vehicle storage area just to the south of our building. On May 11th, Ben Swanson called me back about the carport. Unfortunately, we would not be able to construct the carport as we had recently been rezoned and were now considered legal non-conforming use. When I questioned Ben, it appeared that in 2016 or 2017, the city rezoned the area just off US 2 in Lewis in order to allow Adventure Motorsports to move from the industrial area to the old Dell's Farm and Feed. And about the same time, they took the motor vehicle sale facility, motorsport only sale zone off of the businesses at the end of Main Street and Railroad. So I'm going to repeat that. I was initially told that the two zoning changes were linked. However, I did approach the Planning Commission on May 14th, and they assured me that it didn't happen that way. Ben also clarified then that the zoning was actually changed in 2008, but phased in over a number of years, and actually hit my building in 2016. Can you continue back with my story? Mr. Swanson explained that we're grandfathered in, so our usage changed to legal non-conforming use. But there are real drawbacks to that classification. Specifically, we cannot expand within our footprint. So even though we are currently using the paved parking area south of our building for vehicle storage, I can't put a carport over that. That's considered expansion. He also went on to explain that I couldn't expand our square footage in the building. So if I wanted to take over the best practices bunk bed store, which connects to my showroom through a roll-up door, I couldn't do it. Other problems with legal non-conforming use: I may not be able to rebuild after a catastrophic loss, I may not be able to borrow money against the business, and I'm not sure what happens if the building is sold. So honestly, I'm not sure when or why the zoning changed, but according to the 2007 sports branding study, page 24 of that specifically calls out some retail recommendations on Main Street from Blakely to Railroad, and it does specify a motorcycle ATV shop. So what was done can be undone. My ask for you is to have motor vehicle sales facility, motor sport only sale, to be a permitted use in the East Downtown area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Driscoll. What we'll do is we'll have staff go ahead and put together a briefing for council. If it's if there's no objection from council, we'll schedule that for a study session over the next couple weeks so that we can go over the history on that and how that occurred.
Thank you for coming.
Yep. Thank you very much for coming, Ms. Driscoll. All right, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the council this evening? Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda, and this item is council member reports. There are no committee reports this evening, so we'll just go ahead and go down the dais. You're throwing me because you're to my right this evening. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
No, I have nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
I went to the Economic Alliance meeting, luncheon, kind of annual meeting last Thursday. Thank you, Liz, for doing it last minute and getting in there. It was definitely worthwhile to go. I don't think I went last year. I went the year before, so they went over kind of what's going on in the county and around the port and lots of interesting information. So I think it would be beneficial for us to kind of keep tabs on what's happening there and maybe invite them to come and do a report here for council.
Okay.
So I was talking with their government affairs staff member, and I don't think they've been here in a while. I'm trying to think last time.
Probably within the last 12 months, I think they've been here, but we can certainly double check.
Reach out and see if they're willing to come and kind of do an overview of their annual report.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be great, so helpful.
Okay, we'll go ahead and we'll put that on the extended agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Cutterback. Let me go ahead. Do we have any reports from our directors this evening? You sure, Ms. Hassert?
But it's going to be starting shortly.
All right. We'll come on up here then for City Administrator update. Ms. Knight.
Just a couple of items that came out of the last MRSC newsletter that comes to us on a monthly basis. So there was one on four bad habits to avoid during council meetings, which I thought was somewhat helpful and enlightening, and then also just a briefing on study session. So if you're always wondering, I'm an executive session, so if you're wondering about the do's and don'ts of executive sessions, I thought that was a really nice outline too. On the upcoming meeting on next Tuesday, just a reminder that your meeting has been canceled for Memorial Day, so enjoy the long weekend. On the 5th of June, we have a short regular meeting. That's the time that we're switching our meeting and starting regular meetings on the first Tuesday of the month.
Study session.
Study session. Yeah, got that backwards. Thank you. So our first regular meeting will be on June 12th. I do have a study session scheduled. We do on June 19th. We are tentatively scheduled to talk about the uniform development regulation, so that might be the right time then to bring back this issue about the non-conforming use in the downtown. I think that will be appropriate. Also note that we're also going to be talking about school safety. We'll have the school board superintendent here, so Deacon Smith will be joining us and talking about what it is that schools currently doing, what do they have in their budget surrounding school safety. We're planning to invite somebody from the Sheriff's Department to come talk about what they're doing on school safety for those schools that are outside of the city limits, and then also Councilmember Sandwell. So that'll be, I think, a good discussion to have during the summer session. So any questions that you have about any upcoming items?
Any questions, council members? All right. Taking a look at Monroe this week, you can see that we have a number of openings. We also just learned today of a park board member who has resigned. So we have two openings this year for Parks Advisory Board. We will be advertising that second opening here soon. We also, as you'll see in Monroe this week, some notes. I do thank you all last week for for the temporary waiver for permits in the downtown area. Thank you for doing that last week. And you'll see some reminders in there about lodging tax funds that are becoming available, and or rather what the application time frame is. And thank you for your consideration on the Snoqualmie Valley Transit coming to Monroe, and the other items that you took care of over the last couple weeks. So thank you. I do see that Ms. Knight's got something. Ms. Knight?
Yeah, I actually have two things. I meant to follow up on Councilmember Cutterback's question earlier during the legislative review. Just two quick clarifications. The facilities that Brian Wall was talking about are called small cell facilities, and the idea behind small cells is that in order to get faster and more reliable service, the internet providers and service providers want to place what Brian was describing as facilities that are about this big onto poles. And the idea behind that is that the signals that we're sending from our cell phones and other devices get aggregated at these small cell facilities and then go off to the cell towers themselves. And that's what they're doing in order to provide faster service. So the time that it takes to actually send the signal to a cell tower and back again is the lag time. And so in order to reduce that lag time, what they want to do is put these small cell facilities on individual poles. They can't be undergrounded. And that's what the current review is. So we have been keeping a really close eye on our own telecommunications regulations as we watch these debates happen at the state legislative level, but we're not prepared to make any changes because we don't want to have to come back and reverse some legislative change in the future. The other issue that Brian was discussing around local routes is something that's called State Routes of Local Interest. I spoke to Robin Mayhew at Puget Sound Regional Council. She is actually the person who is responsible for implementing this program. She's currently in the process of hiring her staff, and so she doesn't expect that we're going to be seeing anything move forward until fall of this year. And it is limited to state routes that act as main streets. So I already spoke with her about our concerns on SR 522, US 2, and Highway 203. We have some shared interests around wanting to make sure that legislative districts aren't getting in the way of getting improvements done, and that differences in county lines aren't also impeding work on 203. So she's aware of what our issues are, and I've already got our name in the list for serving on the committee in the future. So just to let you know, that's what the state routes of local interest was all about.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any follow-up questions? All right. Also, before I went on vacation last week, I was able to take part in the Department of Corrections, where we were honoring people that were Department of Corrections employees and corrections officers. This is the event where, in addition to honoring them as part of Corrections Officers and Employees Week, they also named the road that is up there in front of the prison after Jamie Bendel and the other person whose name I'm forgetting right now, I'm sorry, who passed away at the prison back in roughly 1960 or so. So they've had two on-duty losses up there, and that road is now named after both of them. The event was attended by people, by professionals in Oregon, Washington, and also Canada. There were a lot of people there. I think that's it right now. I do have a meeting tomorrow with former Senator Pearson, I think we're going to be talking to him about rural communities or something in his new role. And again, I will, among other things, be talking to him about 522. And I think that's about all that I have to report. Oh, except for I will be at Flags for the Fallen on Saturday. I encourage everybody to show up and certainly, you know, walk or run if you're able to do that. I will also be attending the memorial that will be occurring on Memorial Day. I think the time was 11 a.m. that was in the proclamation that I read earlier. That is up at the IOOF cemetery, and I would encourage you to go. Also, Monday morning, I will be doing what I've been doing the last couple of years since the memorial was placed at Lake Tai, and we'll be putting a wreath out at the memorial. It's nothing fancy. It's just where my wife and I will usually show up around 7 in the morning and just put put a wreath out and just give thanks privately. You all are certainly welcome to, you know, to come there and be there with me. I think at Veterans Day last year we had a couple people show up, and I think even a pastor had shown up and said a prayer while we were there. I will be there though at 7 a.m. and if you'd like to join me in placing that, just let me know. I've already ordered the wreath, and so your attendance would be great if you're able to be there at 7. I do that early in the morning because I then go up to the IOOF event and sometimes help out in putting the flags out along the road. So those are a couple things that you can join in with me this weekend if you'd like to. I think that's all I have this evening. Does anybody have any questions for me? Okay. There's no further business this evening. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Scarborough, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. And we are adjourned.